FTR Radio is From the Right Radio, online at FTRradio.com.
You're listening to Gillespie, Excellence in Internet Radio, only on FTRradio.com. And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTR Radio. I am pleased to have Indiana Senate, U.S. Senate candidate Richard Murdoch on with us. Last time we talked with Richard was at CPAC, and we're kind of catching up with him now. And he's had quite the week. It's been an incredible week, and I'm going to let Richard talk more about this. Richard, thanks for being on this week.
Well, thank you, Josh. Great to be back with you. Seems like CPAC was 100 years ago in some ways.
You are not kidding, just because, I mean, if there has to be a time when we can pinpoint when the Murdoch campaign was really about to get some major momentum behind it. I remember you and I were talking about Senator Lugar's residency issues. And, you know, the issue itself had been sort of percolating, but it seemed to really just kind of explode after CPAC.
It did. You know, when shortly after that ended, the Marion County, which is here in Indianapolis, of course, the Marion County Election Board took away his right to vote, said he couldn't vote from a house in which he did not live and some other family lived. Ultimately, he sued to say, you can't make me live in Indiana, which was just an astonishing thing. That sent a shockwave across the state. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, they reached negotiation with the Election Commission to now say he can vote from a house where he does not live and someone else lives. So it's really muddled the issue, and it certainly spread the word that Mr. Lugar has been out of touch with Indiana for a long, long time.
Did it surprise you that he had the kind of pushback that he did, that, I mean, basically he sued the people of Indiana?
It stunned me. You know, I honestly thought what his reaction would be to simply very quickly rent an apartment, file with the registration to vote from there, and frankly, the whole problem would have gone away very quickly. But for whatever reason, he doubled down to say, you can't make me live in Indiana. And the longer that went on, the worse it got for him, and ultimately, I think someone kind of gave him, you know, the political advice, which is, you know, you've got to make this go away. And so they cut this deal to, again, vote from a house where he and his wife have never lived.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seemed about that time, like I said, that your campaign's momentum really took off. And you made up a deficit in polling numbers in quite a short amount of time to the point now where the most recent poll that was released showed that you are ahead of the senator. It's probably a statistical tie. I mean, you know, with all the numbers, but I mean, it basically the poll did show you ahead.
Well, actually, there's been another poll since then, and you're right.
Really?
You know, yeah, and about April 20th for the first time. And keep in mind, we began our campaign in February of 2011. Mm-hmm. And after about 14 and a half months, on Wednesday, about April 20th, for the first time, we went ahead, as you said, statistically, margin of error, but we went ahead. But since then, another poll has been released that actually shows we're leading 44 to 39.
Wow.
That was just tremendous momentum for us. We've continued to build and build on that. The other thing that really turned this thing around for us, frankly, was the debate that we had. Senator Lugar and I had a televised debate that got a lot of broadcast. Actually, it was live on C-SPAN. It resulted in a lot of fundraising come in over the internet through richardmurdoch.com. That was tremendous. Continues to help in that regard. But one of the things we saw in the polling after the debate was that 1% of the people who went in watching the debate expecting to vote for me ended up deciding to vote for Mr. Lugar, but almost 12% of those who went in expecting to vote for Mr. Lugar decided to switch and vote for me. So that kind of thing really got us going and got the media paying attention. The presidential primary season effectively ended, and there's been more national focus. So all in all, momentum is always important, and we got it going for us right now.
Well, I have to say one thing about that debate, and you know, I watched that thing, and I was live blogging it, and the presentation could not have, in my opinion, could not have gone worse for Senator Lugar. And it seemed as if, I think that there was a lot of perception after the debate that many of the questions, because they focus so much on foreign policy, were designed to help Senator Lugar, but we know that the debate commission picked the questions ahead of time. But the thing is I don't think people expected you to really hold your own on a lot of these foreign policy questions, and you were answering them and giving very thoughtful and forthright answers. And I think that really kind of took a lot of people by surprise, because they thought, oh, this is Senator Lugar's wheelhouse. And here comes a state senator, or excuse me, state treasurer, you know, and he's holding his own against what people believe is, you know, one of the preeminent minds on foreign policy in the U.S. Senate.
Well, I've been saying for many months, and, you know, by and large, when I'm at the Rotary Club, when I'm at the Chamber, I don't get many questions on foreign policy. Mm-hmm. But I've been saying for many months, if you're going to claim you're the foreign policy expert, then at least be right on the policy.
Yeah.
I had that opportunity. You know, Mr. Lugar, obviously he did good work with the Nunn-Lugar bill of more than 20 years ago. But we continue to send over $1 billion a year into Russia. And in fact, now they're sending money to Syria, and Syria is sending money to Iran. So can we really argue that we're using that money for nuclear non-proliferation when, in fact, it's all money being fungible? It ends up in Syria. You know, Mr. Lugar was against the surge in Iraq. Mr. Lugar was the first U.S. government official to call for the so-called Saudi plan, which would cause Israel to withdraw to its 1967 borders. And I can think of no way to destabilize the Middle East faster than to give the image that the United States of America is going to pull the rug out from under Israel. So, you know, he and I have differences, and I was glad. You know, I had a lot of people say to me later that they were disappointed there were so many questions on foreign policy. Frankly, I'm glad the questions were there, because we got to show some real differences between ourselves.
Well, and I think that a lot of people think that there aren't a lot of differences between you two, but I think the one thing that this campaign has shown is that there really is a great deal of difference, if there ever was one, between two Republican candidates in a primary. You've really separated yourself on justices, on spending, and on foreign policy. And have you seen that really reach out to a lot of Hoosier voters? Has that kind of connected with them?
Absolutely. The issue you mentioned about the appointment of liberal Supreme Court justices, Josh, everywhere I go, that issue will always come up. I mean, people know that thanks to Dick Lugar, we have Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan on the United States Supreme Court. They are two very young women. They're going to be there for years and years to come. And their philosophies are far away from what I like to see, define as strict constructionism, or what Judge Bork used to call originalism. Mm-hmm. Mr. Lugar thinks, well, there ought to just be, you know, this deference paid to the president, that elections should have consequences, that the president gets elected, and thereby he or she gets to appoint whoever he wants, short of major malfeasance. And I totally disagree. You know, elections to the United States Senate should have consequences. Otherwise, those magic words of Article 2, Section 2 about advice and consent get redefined as rubber stamp. And I don't think that's what our founders meant. They meant advice and consent. They wanted the United States Senate to make sure that people were going to be appointed to the courts who do strictly abide by the Constitution. And on that issue, Mr. Lugar and I are widely apart.
Now, one of the major issues of not just the campaign season in general, but in America in general, is jobs. How do you approach addressing the jobs and economy situation as a U.S. senator?
Well, aggressively is the first adverb I would use. You know, we have to roll back the regulatory environment that exists. There is an absolute jackboot of federal regulation standing on the necks of America's small businesses. That's hurting us badly. We've got to change the tax code, because we now have, when you include local taxes in most areas, the highest corporate tax rates in the world. And we wonder why we're not developing jobs and seeing American companies head overseas. We've got to roll back the tax code. We've got to get that regulatory environment changed so we can start to spur businesses. One of the things, though, and I hear this frequently, especially every time I go to New York, when I'm on Wall Street, people tell me, and they always bring up the Chrysler bankruptcy, in which I sued the federal government and tried to stop the bailout of Chrysler that was done in such an illegal fashion. They make the point that the bankruptcies that were done by the Obama administration in both Chrysler and General Motors so shocked the business market that major corporations are sitting on the sidelines because they're afraid the rules are going to change. You know, business wants to have stability. They want to know the rules they're playing by. And those two bankruptcies sent the message that the government will change the rules whenever they think it's convenient. And that, too, is a message we've got to turn around and help businesses know they're going to have a stable environment in which to operate.
Well, we've been talking about momentum with your campaign. Your campaign got a major boost this last week and a major endorsement at a perfect time when a PAC that was supporting Senator Lugar pulled out. Tell us a little bit about this endorsement that you received.
Well, absolutely. You know, on Thursday of last week, it was announced that we were leading by 5 points in a survey that was done by Citizens United. Then the next day, on Friday, Governor Sarah Palin made her first endorsement of the 2012 season, put out a wonderful release, a wonderful endorsement, saying, as we've been saying, Senator Lugar, you've given us admirable service. We appreciate it, but it's time for a different voice in the United States Senate. And then as a result of that, the major Republican PAC that had been supporting Mr. Lugar here in Indiana announced they were pulling out of the state. That after they had previously pledged, I think, to spend $800,000 on his behalf, they packed up and left. So I think they're sensing where the momentum is. Mr. Lugar is below 40% as a 36-year incumbent, and you're just a few days now ahead of an election. When you can't even get to 40%, there's a message being sent.
Well, you know, I know that there has been this growing sentiment among the electorate nationwide against legislators who have basically called it a career in Washington. And Senator Lugar, he has been spending there for 36 years. And, I when you started off this campaign and back in February of last year, you know, the one thing that you mentioned is that, you know, you had a lot of respect for Senator Lugar. He has served Indiana, and he served us well, but he's really been disconnected lately. And
Yes, he truly has. And even the best evidence of that is what we spoke of a moment ago, Josh. To think that he could come back and make a legal argument that says, you can't make me live in Indiana, sent that message that he just didn't seem to understand that Hoosiers would receive, that he doesn't want to be here. I mean, that's the message, whether he intended it or not. That is the message that was clearly sent. And it's one that's still lingering, and we know it's driving a lot of people's voting process.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Richard Murdoch. I want you guys all to check him out at richardmurdoch.com. That is M-O-U-R-D-O-C-K, richardmurdoch.com. Donate to this guy. Our primary is just a week away. And, you know, hey, if he's good enough for Sarah Palin, he's good enough for me. And I hope he's good enough for you guys. He's going to represent Indiana well in the U.S. Senate. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Murdoch, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Josh. Great being with you, as always.
Been a pleasure to talk with you. We've been talking with Richard Murdoch, candidate for U.S. Senate here in Indiana. We'll be right back after these messages here on FTRradio.com. Something moving, feeling new air. It is real
quiet, muddy water. FTR Radio salutes some of the great Democrat presidents in the radio era. FTR Radio.